This program is not being used to make diagnosis, administer treatment, prescribe medication, or order tests. The information contained in this program is provided as an educational service. This program is not a replacement for the relationship you have with your healthcare provider. If you have concerns about your health, please contact your healthcare provider immediately.
Hello, I'm Dr. Courtney Shelton, MD. I'm a board-certified internist and primary care physician. I am the medical director and owner of Shelton Hospitalist Group. Welcome to the checkup on WCLK. I will discuss important health issues facing all of us, using my own experience and that of my guests to give you knowledge you can use to lead a healthier and happier life. My guest today is none other than Mrs. Janice Shelton, founder of Our Children's Keeper. And our topic today is the issue of child sex trafficking in Atlanta. They say Atlanta has become the hub for child sex trafficking. Can you imagine pimps can make up to $35,000 a week on trafficking our little angels? Just last year in our nation's capital, there were several brown and black girls who went missing, and there was nothing but silence, no public outcry. Today on the checkup, we will be discussing child sex trafficking, especially in Atlanta, Georgia, with Mrs. Janice Shelton. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning, and thank you so much for having me.
Janice, can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the prevention and awareness of child sex trafficking?
Absolutely. Well, I was first brought to my attention was when the young ladies that you mentioned earlier were missing in D.C. And when those ladies became missing, I was just disheartened at the fact that there was no mainstream media attention brought to this situation. The only time I heard about this was on social media through Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But I was just alarmed that, you know, it was not getting national coverage. So I actually got in contact with the foundation and flew to D.C. to actually talk to these parents and these families. And I was their spokesperson for their 5K that they did. And sitting there and talking to the families and hearing the pain of the fact that they don't know where their child is. Some families, you know, weren't able to recover their missing child. They were had, you know, they're passed away. You know, some kids were been missing 5, 6, 7 months. Other families have been missing their kids for years. And that was just so disheartening to me. And it was so disappointing, the fact that our children, our black and brown children, can go missing in this country and be treated as an afterthought. So I wanted to use my platform. And a lot of people know me. I was as best known as the season 4 cast member of Buried to Medicine. And it has given me such a huge plight and amazing platform to be able to raise awareness of the child sex trafficking epidemic, especially here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Why is Atlanta a hub for child sex trafficking?
That's a very good question. Atlanta is a hub solely the fact that it has the largest international airport. There's so much travel that goes through Atlanta Hartsfield Airport, and it is kind of like an incubator for traffickers to be able to transport victims, if you will, survivors, through you know, the airport to other cities, other countries, and it's easy to do that. But all I can say is that Atlanta Hartsfield Airport has been doing an amazing job as raising awareness to this situation and training their employees on different signs to look for when they feel like someone may be in jeopardy or be in danger of being a victim of sex trafficking. And then also we have a huge entertainment district here. You know, we have major events going on. So again, that's another avenue as far as drawing attention to the city, you know, bringing money here, and that draws traffickers and pedophiles here to the city.
Are there other cities that have a lot of child sex trafficking? Is this something that's that prevalent that we see it in all cities and urban settings, suburban, rural?
Yes, we have to understand sex trafficking does not discriminate. It goes on in every city. Every city is being affected. It's just some cities are known because they have a higher rate than others. But it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't discriminate against age, sex, gender. And here in Atlanta, it is a $290 million industry business as far as sex trafficking is concerned. And these traffickers here in Atlanta, they make, as you mentioned, over $32,000 a week selling the innocence of our children. So it is a huge problem. It's a huge epidemic. And a lot of people think of sex trafficking as being a third world country issue, but it's not. It's going on right here in Atlanta, in our backyard, Fulton County, Cobb County, Clayton County. It's going on right here. So we just have to be more vigilant. As I always say, is that our village has been broken. Because I remember when I was little, you know, when we got off the school bus and you got in trouble from being in school, then, you know, the whole neighborhood knew about it. You might have had Miss Smith across the street fussing at you, had Mr. Jones fussing at you. You might have got your butt beat two or three times before you got home.
That's right.
And grandma beat your butt again.
That's right. Now,
you know, we're so quick to turn our head. We don't want to talk about it. Oh, I don't want to get involved. That's not my child. And that's part of the problem, is that we have to learn how to rebuild our village and raise awareness. So it takes conversations like this to raise awareness, because once a child is abducted, we have less than 24 hours to recover them. And if we don't, then the chances of us ever recovering them are drastically reduced, by 65%.
That's so significant. You know, when we think of child sex trafficking, we tend to think that it doesn't involve boys.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was preparing for our discussion, I found out that boys are often easier to kidnap or obtain in traffic than they are the girls. Can you explain that to us?
That is definitely true. Boys, it's so much easier to traffic a young boy. It's because boys, you have to think about it, they're ashamed, they're humiliated, they don't want to talk about it. So because of that shame, they don't report it. And then also you have to understand too that there's not a lot of resources out here for abused and neglected boys, you know, and young men. There's a lot of resources out here for the girls, but there just aren't a lot of resources for boys. So because of the fact where they know that they're not going to get the resources, and no one's going to consider them as a victim, because boys have this, since birth, has been known to be strong and macho, and you gotta cry in the dark. So to think of them being as a victim or abused or neglected, that's just far from our recollection. So, you know, with that said, they don't report it, they don't talk about it, they harbor it inside, and that again is an easy way for a predator to attract them.
Now, I know that I know that different types of predators or pimps, they want access to your children. What are some of the scenarios and situations that put our children at risk?
Some of the things that we have to be mindful of is that, you know, we used to think of a child as a victim coming from a broken home where, let's say, the dad wasn't present, or the mom was on drugs, or there was some type of situation, dysfunctionalism going on in the household, and that set the stereotype for a predator or a victim, the face of a victim. But now things have changed. You can now have a victim, that a child that's been, you know, a victim of sex trafficking in a two-parent household where mom and dad is working, middle-class parents, educated, and they're still falling prey to this horrific situation. We have to be more mindful and pay attention to our children. How many times have you been on the phone talking and your child is trying to talk to you? Hey, mom, look at this. I want to show you something.
Right.
And we're so busy. Oh, no, I'll get back to you. Leave me a second. Let me do this. And after a while, they're going to stop coming to us. And then there's somebody else waiting to talk to them. So we just have to be more vigilant. We have to get to know our children. We have to be involved in our children, with our children's lives. In our household, as you know, that there is no privacy. You know, I go through the phones. I do random checks. And I'm going to know what's going on. And we have to teach our children how to properly and use social media, because social media apps are so dangerous right now. You can actually plug in the exact location, and there's some apps that you don't have to even enable it. It will just tell you exactly where your location is of a child or anyone, not just a child. It'll actually pull up a picture of your location. So we just have to be more mindful of that and understanding the dangers with social media.
You know, at your teen summit that occurred last weekend, there was a young lady there that spoke about being trafficked and then becoming a trafficker. Mm-hmm. And I just thought her story was so amazing. Can you share that with our listeners?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we had an amazing teen summit this past Sunday, and the teen summit was all about prevention. January is the National Sex Trafficking Awareness Month. So we wanted to put on an event that definitely catered to our teens on prevention. So at this teen summit that we did this past Sunday at the John Rick Salon and Spa in the Cave, we actually empowered our youth. We encouraged them. We poured into them. We had powerful speakers there. And then we finished with an image image makeover where they're able to get their hair done, their makeup, wardrobe styling, and have an amazing photo shoot. And these girls were so absolutely beautiful. And we wanted to teach them how to understand and recognize their inner beauty and how it exudes from inner and outwardly. So that's something that we did on Sunday. It was absolutely amazing. But to your point, we had a young lady there. Her name was Toni Rivera, and she has an amazing testimony. She was trafficked here in Atlanta, Georgia for about, 3 years on the streets. And as she grew older, she realized how much money these pedophiles and these Johns and these pimps were making on her. And she decided to become a trafficker herself. She did that for a while. And she would tell me all the time, she said, "Miss Janice, it was easy for me to get the kids." And I said, "Well, how did you get these victims?" If you want, I hate using that word, but how are you targeting these children? She said that she would go to church. And she would go to church, and she would sit in the back of the church, and she would wait for altar call. And the same young lady or young boy that would come up to the altar calls every Sunday, day after day, crying, feeling lost, hopeless, and missing something, feeling a void, she would watch them. And after a while, she would go up to them, befriend them, and that's how she was able to coerce them into sex trafficking. And then we also have to understand that we used to think the pedophile, if you will, used to be an older gentleman. There again, a pedophile does not discriminate. We now have women that are madams, that come in the form of madams, and madams are older women who are unassuming, grandmothers, aunts. And then so when they approach a child automatically has their guard down, because you always think of a woman as nurturing, as safe, as loving, as affectionate. So you would never think that they're being put in danger. And so you have these madams that are running large chains of sex trafficking businesses here in Atlanta and across the world. Then you also have their peers that are in school. You have these big pimps that are hiring these teenage boys and giving them money to recruit young girls in the middle schools and high schools. And that's what's going on now, too. And there's certain words that they use. "Oh, you're so beautiful. Have you ever thought about modeling?" So there's different keywords. So we have to be so mindful, because our children are being tagged in so many different ways. And they have to understand and see the signs, recognize the signs, and then also how to protect themselves against this tragedy as well.
It's so unfortunate. I always remember that movie Taken. And it was entertaining, but you never think that that's really happening. Mm-hmm. But it's really happening. It's right here in our city and all over this country, all over the world. Mm-hmm. And it's just so hard to accept. And I just think that's amazing. If you just joined us on the Checkup with Dr. Courtney Shelton, MD, we are discussing child sex trafficking with Mrs. Janice Shelton, founder of Our Children's Keeper. When you think about that predator or that pimp, what is the profile of that particular predator or pimp? And also part of that question would be, how can parents or coaches or teachers recognize signs and symptoms and different things that would kind of tip us and help us intervene?
Very good. Well, as I said earlier, it's not just the older man that we used to think. They're coming in the forms of their peers, women, older women that are madams. We also have to understand that traffickers also prey on runaways and at-risk youth. Within 48 hours of running away from a home, a young person is likely to be bought or sold for prostitution or some kind of commercial sexual exploitation. Pimps and sex traffickers are skilled at manipulating child victims and maintaining control through a combination of deception, lies, abuse, and even torture. A lot of these kids, they are forced to have sex with, different Johns and predators 10, 15 times a night. They're beaten, they're lied to, they're given this obscure type of affection where they're feeling that they're safe. So when they have all these things, they're afraid to go home. They said that if they scream, they run away, they're going to, hurt their family. So there are so many different things that's going on where they feel like, I have to stay here. I can't run. I can't talk. So some of the signs that we need to look for, whether it's your child or a child in a school or someone that is, physical abuse. Such as burn marks, bruises or cuts, unexplained absences from school, less appropriately dressed than before, sexualized behavior, overly tired in class, withdrawn, depressed, distracted, or just completely checked out, brags about making or having lots of money, displays expensive clothes, accessories, shoes, also new tattoos. Tattoos is something that's that's new in regards to that's how they brand their victims, if you will. And it sounds so, inhumane, but that's how one of the ways of how they're branding their victims with tattoos of a name, a symbol of money, or barcode can also indicate trafficking. Older boyfriends, new friends without a different lifestyle, talks about wild parties or invite other students to attend parties. Anytime you're talking to a young lady and she doesn't give you eye contact, you know, that can sometimes be a sign. Anytime she doesn't know her own cell phone number, she doesn't know her cell phone number at all. She doesn't have ID on her, or she always feels like, you know, the money that she has is not hers. She has to pay this big debt. So these are all different type of signs that we have to look for. And that will actually give us a good indication if our child or a child that we know is in danger.
What happens to the victims of child sex trafficking? I know some of them are killed. They're brought back into the families. It just doesn't stop once your child is retrieved. Can you talk to us a little bit about mm-hmm. that?
You know, sometimes the traffickers use violence, such as gang rape and other forms of abuse, to force the youth to work for them and to remain under their control. The traffickers can also use their ability to supply them with drugs and alcohol as a means of control. Traffickers can also take their victims' identity, their forms of identity, birth certificates, passport, driver's license. In these cases, even if youth do leave, they have no ability to support themselves and will often return to the traffickers. Mm, wow. So that is so disheartening. And, you know, we have to be mindful of that. You know, when we're out here and we're able to recover youth, we have to make sure that they get the proper rehabilitation services. A lot of times, because we as parents, we just want our child back home and we'll do anything to get our child back home. When we recover them, we bring them back into our household, and the normalcy of it is too much for them. You know, the phone ringing, you know, cooking dinner, I talked to one young lady and she said the same exact thing. She said, "Ms. Jesus, it was just too much. When I came back home, you know, my mom changed my room around. She painted everything, put new curtains up and new bedspreads, and, you know, my other siblings running around and doing homework. It was just too much for her. She needed to be transferred directly into a rehabilitation center where she's getting proper treatment and gradually being introduced back into the household, because it is a process. And sometimes we have to understand that not only do we need the rehabilitation services for our survivors, but we also need rehabilitation services for the family. The family needs to understand, how do I adjust my child back into this household? What are some things I need to be aware of? What environments do I not need to put her in at this time? Do I need to put her back in school? Does she need to be homeschooled? You know, so those are the resources that we're lacking as a society, is really supporting our families, not just the children as well. And that's one of the missions of Our Children's Keeper, is that we are not only wanting to assist with the search and recovery of missing and exploited children due to sex trafficking, but we also want to aid in the rehabilitation. So locating a building so that we can provide the necessary services and resources for our youth is one of our mission plans for 2018.
You know, I read that something I found so disheartening was that sometimes the victims of child sex trafficking they're forced into this prostitution, and then they enter the legal system as a criminal, but they were really a victim of this whole horrible institution of child sex trafficking. So here's a young lady who was forced into prostitution, but that she may be arrested and treated as a criminal. Mm-hmm. Are there laws in place or that protect them? Mm-hmm. Or what in that area of child sex trafficking, what's going on there? What's mm-hmm. going on there?
You know, that's a good point, and that is very much true. And there's laws right now that are in place that doesn't necessarily protect victims of sex trafficking. And I know that they are being talked about amending the laws. We talked about the Miranda Law. So there's different things that we can do. Even at the 5K that we did last year, we had various law officers and political leaders that were there. We talked about that very issue, is that when our children are minors, are victims of sex trafficking, when they get a certain age, they're forced into prostitution, then they get charged when they were victims from the beginning. So those are things that are definitely in the making and laws that are being amended. We also need to understand that victims of sex trafficking are often young girls who have been runaways from abusive situations at home and are quickly picked up by traffickers who coerce them into prostitution by promising food, shelter, or clothing. And other recruiting methods includes befriending vulnerable-looking girls at the malls, movie theaters, and even schools. So these recruiters could be a young man, as I mentioned earlier, a boyfriend, or even another girl or older woman that seems friendly and safe. So all those things tie into it, but we definitely got to make sure that we continue to stay with our lawmakers. We're going out here, we vote, we're becoming more active in our community so we can understand exactly how do we amend these laws and get necessary resources available.
Janice, I'm curious about, I want to give the listeners some real life examples of what can happen in child sex trafficking. And I know you've been involved in a lot of different cases. Can you share a story with us to really bring home the point and the dangers of child sex trafficking and the impact it has? Because, you know, when you're walking down the halls of a school, there's such an emphasis placed on bullying, but you don't see anything about child sex trafficking. So the things your organization brings so much awareness is so much important. It's so important. Can you share with us an example?
Yes, most recently in our teen summit this past Sunday, we had a situation where a young lady came in. She looked like she might have been about 13 years old, and she came into the teen summit with her father. As she said, that was her father. But, you know, my team, along with myself, we were quickly alarmed because of the fact of her demeanor. She was very, very withdrawn. She was very scared. She was actually shaking while she was there. You know, the demeanor of the quote unquote father was just not normal, as an interaction would normally happen between a father and a daughter. Even when we put her back to the back to get her ready for her makeover, you know, I asked her different questions because she didn't register, and she was again shaking. Just couldn't give me eye contact. I asked her for a cell number. You know, teenagers, they know their cell phone
That's
numbers.
Right.
You know, they're
That's
on their
right.
phone 24 hours, seven
they live
days
on
a
their
week.
Cell phone.
They sleep with their phone in their bed.
Right.
I asked her for a cell number. She didn't know her cell phone. She had to go into the phone, physically go into the phone to pull her cell phone number out of the phone. So that right there was an indication that it was a dummy phone. You know, the quote unquote dad was very possessive, wanted to know where she was at all time, right there up, you know, in front of her. You know, he wouldn't allow her to answer certain questions. She looked at him for answers. You know, so those were all different type of red flags, and that's just recently happened. We had another situation where in a neighborhood they were calling the police because they thought that a lot of drug dealings were going on because they saw all of these, you know, nice high class cars coming in and out this particular home. And this neighborhood was a very low income community, but they saw, you know, BMWs and high end luxury cars coming in and out this particular neighborhood, going into this one particular house. So they called because they thought, again, it was drugs that were being sold there. When they called the police and they did the search warrant, they were able to get a search warrant. They came into the home and they found out that the man that owned the home, there was no furniture. He had human cages in the living room. There were cages stacked on top of each other, human cages, and there were young girls in the cage. So these cars were coming in and these men were buying these girls for sex 15, 20 minutes at a time. When we interviewed one of the young girls, they said that she was only able to come out of the cage to have sex with a John, to eat, and then she had to go back into the cage. And that was happening right here in Atlanta, Georgia. Human cages.
That's unbelievable. I just, and that's why I want you to share that, to really drive home the impact of child sex trafficking right here in Atlanta, Georgia, where it is now known as a hub for child sex trafficking.
And recently been known as the capital.
Now the capital.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Right here in our city. Now, I know you touched upon some of the missions of Our Children's Keeper. But can you tell us more about your organization and how people can get involved in the form of volunteering and donations?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Our Children's Keeper is a nonprofit 501c3, and there's a lot of great organizations out here, very similar to Our Children's Keeper, that are doing an amazing job. And we're just trying to have an impact in our community and do our part. So we constantly are doing different organizations, different events. We did the 5K last year. We're doing the Teen Summit now. And we're going to be doing another event in June that is going to be the Teen Summit Gala. So we're going to be following these teens that we just honored this past Sunday, and we're going to follow them over the next couple of months. And these are going to be teens that were at risk. There may be some that are survivors of sex trafficking, and making sure that they're progressing and they're getting the resources and the assistance that they need. And then we're going to award them at the gala. It's going to be a Teen Summit Black Tie event, and just want to honor them, just let them feel, you know, as beautiful as they are on the inside, and be able to show that on the outside with getting their hair done and their makeup and getting sponsors to bring in the gowns for them, and the men too, because we can't forget our young boys, you know, have to make sure that we honor them and equip them with everything that they need to be successful. And in that gala, we're working on, you know, being able to give away 2 scholarships. So that is the plan. We're still in the making with that. But, you know, it takes a village. This is something that we need the support from the community on. You know, we can't do this by ourselves. So we definitely are constantly looking for volunteers. We need donations to continue to make this movement. You know, with the families, we help them not only with, you know, private investigator fees to help them find their children, their loved ones, but we help with the attorney fees and, unfortunately, burial costs. And that all costs money. And that's again, right. This is a nonprofit. So we definitely needed the support of our community to continue on with this mission. So you can reach us at info@ourchildrenskeeper.org. Again, that's info@ourchildrenskeeper.org. And we're also on social media. Twitter is OCK Foundation, and Instagram is Our Children Keeper, as well as Facebook is Our Children's Keeper Foundation.
Our Children's Keeper is a nonprofit organization that Janice and I are affiliated with. There are a number of excellent organizations in Atlanta that are also trying to prevent human trafficking every day, and they also are worthy of your support. You can check the post for this show on WCLK.com for a link to a list of these organizations, as well as more information about Our Children's Keeper. Janice, can you give, if you people wanted to get in contact with you or your organization, can you list that for us?
Sure. Our Children's Keeper, our email again is info@ourchildrenskeeper.org. Again, it's info@ourchildrenskeeper.org. And we are located on social media platforms. Instagram is Our Children's Keeper Foundation. Twitter is OCK Foundation. And Facebook is Our Children's Keeper.
Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us today for The Checkup. I'm Dr. Courtney Shelton. You can listen to this program on demand at WCLK.com. I can be reached at the Shelton Hospitalist Group, located at 315 Boulevard Northeast in Atlanta, or by phone at 678-705-2355. Or you can like us on Facebook at Shelton Hospitalist Group, LLC. The Checkup is produced by Dr. Courtney Shelton, Janice Shelton, and Rob Maynard for WCLK. Thanks for listening.